/contact and selecting Apply for a Club Community Takeover. This free opportunity is made possible through the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Radio Meters program.
Do you love spreading inclusion and friendship to help people with intellectual and developmental disabilities? Volunteer with the team at the Best Buddies Friendship Walk at Lake Ontario Park on October 5th from 9:30 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Welcome back to Melodies of Myth, where we explore short historical tales blended with Indian classical and Western music. I'm your host, Simar Kaur, and it's an honor to accompany you on this journey of discovering the rich interweaving of music and history. Together, we will explore the stories, traditions, and timeless melodies that have shaped our understanding of this art form. There's a story my grandmother used to tell me on long summer nights. The story of Savitri and Satyavan. She would say it softly, almost like a song, her voice rising and falling like the strings of a sitar. I never understood as a child why she called it a story of life and breath rather than a love story, but now, I think I do know. Once upon a time, in the heart of an Indian kingdom, there lived a princess named Savitri. She was known not only for her beauty, but for her clarity. The kind of mind that doesn't just accept fate, but examines it. When it was time to marry, Savitri did not wait for a matchmaker. She wanted to choose for herself. So she traveled across forests and fields, temples and towns, until she met Satyavan. He wasn't a prince or a warrior. He was a simple man who lived in the forest, splitting firewood and caring for his blind parents. But when Savitri looked at him, she saw something rare, kindness that did not need to be spoken aloud. There was, however, one condition that would make any parent tremble. A sage told her, Satyavan is destined to die 1 year from today. But Savitri didn't flinch. She said, if I must love for only a year, then let that year be mine. She married him, left her palace, and moved into the forest. She learned to cook over a clay stove, to draw water from the river, to braid her hair with vile jasmine. And every morning she sat beside him while he played a flute he had carved for himself. Days turned into months. The year passed like the slow unfolding of a rag, patient, deliberate, full of hidden grace notes. But when the 12th month came, the rhythm began to change. Even the trees seemed quieter, as if they knew what was coming. One morning, Satyavan said, let's go to the woods. The sky looks bright today. Savitri followed, her heart steady but heavy. As he swung his axe into the tree, he suddenly paused. His arms weakened, his breath shortened. He leaned against her shoulder and whispered, I feel so tired. And there, beneath the great banyan tree, Satyavan's head rested in her lap, his breath slipping away like the fading note of a veena. When he exhaled one last time, the air around her shifted. From the shadows, a tall, calm figure appeared. Yam, the god of death. His voice was neither cruel nor kind, just final. Princess, he said, your husband's time has come. I will take his soul. Savitri could have screamed. She could have begged, but instead she bowed her head and said, I understand. But if you are walking away with him, then I will walk too. The god raised an eyebrow. No living being may follow me. I'm not following, she replied softly. I'm just walking in the same direction. And so she walked through the forest, across rivers, over stones that bruised her feet, never breaking her silence. Finally, the god turned and said, you are steadfast, Savitri. I will grant you a boon. Anything except your husband's life. She thought for a moment and said, then give sight to my father-in-law who has lived too long in darkness. The god nodded. It is done. But Savitri kept walking. After a while, he said, turn back now. The living cannot walk with the death. And she replied, the living cannot stop caring for the dead. He sighed and offered another boon. Ask again. Then restore my father-in-law's lost kingdom, she said. He has suffered long enough. It shall be so. Still, she did not stop. Step by step, her sari torn, her hair loose, she followed. Yama finally said, you are testing me, Savitri. She smiled. I am only learning from you, Lord, how to be patient. For the third time, he offered her another boon. Ask wisely now, he said. And Savitri said, grant me 100 sons to bless my future. Yama agreed before realizing the trap in her words. 100 sons? How will that be if your husband remains with me? And she bowed again. Then give him back so that your promise can be fulfilled. For the first time, Death himself laughed. A full warm laugh that sounded almost human. Savitri, he said, you have conquered me, not with tears, but with reason. And it released Satyavan's soul, returning it to her hands like a precious thread. When Savitri opened her eyes, dawn had broken. Satyavan stirred beside her as if walking from sleep. They walked home together, the forest light turning gold around them. When my grandmother told this story, she would hum softly after it ended. A long, low note, that kind that lingers like the drone of a tanpura. And she said, "Remember, love isn't loud, it's steady." To me, the story of Savitri and Satyavan isn't just about defending death. It's about rhythm. In Indian classical music, the beauty of a rag isn't in the climax, it's in the patience, in how each note unfolds, how silence fills the space between sounds. Savitri understood that rhythm. She did not fight fate. She followed it until she found her own harmony within it. When I first moved to Canada, I used to listen to recordings of the violin and the veena together. They sounded so different, one earthy and one airy, but one played in silence and sync. They made a unity that felt almost sacred. That's what Savitri reminds me of. Balance between the seen and the unseen, love and loss, action and surrender. Here, when life feels uncertain, assignments piling up, seasons changing too fast, family far away, I think of her. Of walking forward even when the path feels dark, trusting that understanding can be its own form of courage. Savitri's stories is not about miracles. It's about the music of staying, of breathing, of speaking softly to what scares you until it listens back. So tonight, if you find yourself in a quiet moment, maybe walking home under the Kingston sky or sitting by the lake with headphones in, think of Savitri. Imagine her footsteps on the forest floor, slow and certain, weaving her rhythm into the world. Because sometimes the truest form of strength is not in stopping the storm, but in learning to walk with it, keeping your own melody steady until even the sky hums along.
Sexual Assault Center Kingston is a nonprofit organization providing confidential, free, non-judgmental support for all survivors age 12 and up of recent and or historical sexual violence in KFLNA since 1978. At the heart of our work is a deep partnership with our community and all its members. If you or someone you know has experienced sexual violence, please note that you are not alone. We provide counseling, crisis support, and advocacy services at no charge. Please visit our website at sackingston.com to learn more about our counseling and advocacy services. If you or someone you know are in need of crisis support, please reach out to our 24/7 telephone crisis support line by dialing 1-877-544-6424. You can also text or chat with a trained crisis responder from noon to midnight every day by texting 613-544-6424 or visiting WeBelieveSurvivors.ca. For more information about our services, please call our office at 613-545-0762 or email us at sack@sackingston.com. We believe you and we hear you.
Our journey today comes to an end. Thank you so much for listening and see you next Friday, 3 p.m. on Melodies of Myth.
And now it's time to set our dials back with the Rainbow Rewind, your look at the moments, milestones, and memories that shape our queer journey.
He is considered a sacred figure by both Republicans and Democrats. He led the nation through its greatest crisis.
He's on our currency. We build monuments to him.
He's the greatest president the United States has ever had.
Today, the big question that people are asking is, was Abraham Lincoln gay?
To the This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Slovakia limits genders and bans surrogacy. Rainbow Rewind marks memorable October observances. And documentary uncovers Lincoln's gay love life. Those stories and more this week now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Melanie Keller.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending October 4th, 2025.
Male and female are the only two genders to be recognized in Slovakia. Lawmakers approved a constitutional amendment on September 26th that also bans surrogacy and limits adoption to married couples. A 2014 amendment already defined civil marriage as exclusively heterosexual. Schools will now be required to comply with the cultural and ethical positions of the Slovak Constitution. With a shaky coalition of parties ranging from the far right to the far left, Prime Minister Robert Fico strongly supported the amendment. He called it necessary to defend traditional values against liberal ideology that was spreading like cancer in his country. There had been doubts that Fico's 78-seat ruling coalition could reach the required 3/5 majority of the 150-seat National Council to pass the law. However, 12 opposition council members helped barely meet that threshold. Although Slovakia joined the European Union in 2004, the amendment claims the Central European nation's national sovereignty in cultural and ethical matters. That could lead to clashes over queer rights like those between the EU and Viktor Orban's Hungary. Slovak PM Fico has also angered fellow EU member states by meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin at least 4 times in the past year. This amendment directly endangers our EU membership, bringing us even closer to authoritarian Russia, according to the Slovak LGBTQ and intersex rights group Iniciava Inokost. The group's Facebook post called the vote a violation of human rights and our international obligations, and one of the most dangerous decisions the Slovak parliament has ever made.
Japan's government is taking 9 new baby steps towards full marriage equality. Inclusion under the laws and ordinances, such as the Disaster Condolence Grant, essentially mean same-gender relationships will be treated the same as de facto heterosexual marriages as of September 30th. 24 other couples' statutes were extended to same-gender couples in January, including the Public Housing Act, the Domestic Violence Prevention Act, the Child Abuse Prevention Act, and the Land and House Lease Act. 3 of Japan's 8 regional high courts ruled in 2024 and 25 that denying civil marriage to same-gender couples is unconstitutional. Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba's coalition government has bowed to those decisions in tiny increments. However, the power to open the institution to queer couples rests with the National Diet, the nation's legislature. Not untypically, lawmakers lag behind the citizenry. Recent polling shows nearly 70% of the Japanese public supports full marriage equality. Even Ishiba has admitted that opening civil marriage to gay and lesbian couples would make the nation happier.
There's nowhere for Scotland's transgender public school students to relieve themselves anymore. This due to a government order forcing all student and staff to use bathrooms and other sex-segregated campus facilities that match their biological gender. Teachers report that their trans students are now limiting food and drink to avoid the situation, according to Pink News. Gender-neutral bathrooms are an option under the guidance issued on September 29th. However, transgender students are now also barred from participating in sex-segregated physical education classes based on their gender identity. The UK's Supreme Court controversially ruled in April that only biological women are legally women under the country's Equality Act. A judge later required 6 Scottish schools to provide separate bathrooms for male and female pupils. Scotland's Education Secretary Jenny Gilruth claimed that the new guidance provides clarity following those 2 rulings. CEO Maya Forstater of the human rights charity Sex Matters disagrees. She calls the new guidance muddled and ideological, unlawful, and unnecessarily complex. The Educational Institute of Scotland represents more than 80% of Scotland's teaching staff. In the words of their press statement, the new guidance falls short of providing clarity and reassurance that the rights of transgender and non-binary pupils will be preserved in the current legal context, and how schools and teachers can continue to balance competing statutory obligations. The Institute's General Secretary, Andrea Bradley, adds, "Decisions will be left up to individual local authorities and schools. While the guidance fails to address how significant concerns about the health, safety, and well-being of transgender pupils will be addressed if pupils cannot use facilities in accordance with their gender identity."
The Canadian government is advising residents with gender-neutral passports to reconsider plans to travel to the United States. The October 1st Department of Global Affairs update to its U.S. travel advice page warns, while the government of Canada issues passports with the X gender identifier, it cannot guarantee your entry or transit through other countries. An executive order issued soon after Donald Trump's second presidential term began declared that there are only two legal genders in the U.S., male and female. Secretary of State Marco Rubio followed with a directive limiting gender markers on passports to only male or female. Lower court rulings have prevented the implementation of those limitations, and the Trump administration is appealing to the Supreme Court. The Canadian government counts some 3,600 citizens who have chosen the X gender marker for their passports, according to the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. That option has been available to Canadians since 2019. Jennifer Young of the U.S. Embassy in Canada said that they cannot comment on the new travel advisory due to the current U.S. government shutdown.
Gay men looking to hook up in the cruisy toilets of New York City's Penn Station are being caught up in a massive sting operation. Unencumbered by the city's sanctuary policy, the federal Amtrak police are working in association with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. 200 men have reportedly been arrested for public lewdness since June, and at least one legal asylum seeker was detained. He was released after a month in custody. One man told the independent online publication The City that he was literally just using the urinal while wearing a rainbow wristband when he was arrested and handcuffed to a wall. He says he overheard an Amtrak officer say, "Yeah, we got three more pervs." He was detained there for 3 hours and the charges were eventually dropped. New York City Council LGBTQ plus caucus co-chairs Eric Botcher and Tiffany Caban wrote a letter to Amtrak President Roger Harris, calling for an immediate end to the sting operation and assurances that such civil rights violations would not be repeated.
Finally, the right-wing U.S. echo chamber is apoplectic over Harvard University's latest hire, Lahore Vajistan. That's the drag queen stage name of Kareem Kubchadani, the F.O. Matheson Visiting Professor of Gender and Sexuality. Matheson was a highly regarded openly gay Harvard professor. Kubchadani is visiting from Tufts University, where he's an associate professor of theater, dance, and performance studies. At Harvard, he'll be teaching queer ethnography in the autumn semester and RuPaulitics, drag, race, and desire next spring. Elon Musk's ex was all abuzz with homophobic abuse at Kubchadani and Harvard, belittling the drag performer's academic worth. Kubchadani holds a master's degree and a PhD in performance studies. His research has focused on the confluence of queer nightlife, global politics, ethnography, and the South Asian diaspora and drag. His scholarly work has been published in at least 7 academic journals, including the Journal of Asian American Studies and The Scholar and Feminist Online. The oldest university in the United States has been at loggerheads with the Trump administration for months over its allegedly too woke DEI hiring and curriculum. In an interview with
theater topics. Professor Kumchandani talks about lecturing at Northwestern University and the University of Texas at Austin in his drag persona. It's not clear if he'll do the same at Harvard, but he told the publication, "You can't teach in less than 6-inch heels. But then again, you can't do a lot of things with less than 6 inches.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending October 4th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Melanie Keller. Stay healthy.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
There's no downside. Nothing bad can happen. It can only good happen.
Listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine.
And now it's time to set our dials back with the Rainbow Rewind, your look at the moments, milestones, and memories that shape our queer journey.
From hard-won victories to cultural firsts, from the unknown to their iconic legends,
we celebrate the people and events that remind us how far we've come and how far we still shine. I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Brian DeShazer. This week, we celebrate the birth of a few remarkable queer voices. Born October 1st, 1991, Gus Kentworthy is an openly gay American freestyle skier and an advocate for LGBTQ visibility in sports.
Also born on October 1st, 1991, Abby Stein. Abby is known for being the first openly trans woman raised in an Hasidic community and for her work building support for trans people of Orthodox Jewish background.
Now let's rewind some queer key moments. On October 1st, 1989, Denmark becomes the first country in the world to recognize registered partnerships for same-sex couples.
And tragically, during the first week of October 1998, Matthew Shepard was brutally attacked. His murder became a galvanizing moment in the United States for hate crime legislation and the movement against anti-LGBTQ violence.
This story was reported on by Cindy Friedman on This Way Out's News Wrap the week of October 12, 1998.
The week began with the death of Matthew Shepard and ended with his funeral in an apparent gay bashing case which has gripped the national interest to an unprecedented degree. The previous week, two young men reportedly lured the University of Wyoming student out of a Laramie bar and into their truck by pretending to be gay themselves, only to rob him, beat him mercilessly, and tie him to a fence, where he was not discovered until as much as 18 hours later after a night of near-freezing temperatures. After 5 days in a coma from having his head smashed by a gun butt, Shepard succumbed early October 12.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind.
Because our stories aren't just in the past, they're the pride that powers our future.
I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lunn. Stay tuned. More This Way Out is just ahead.
Was Abraham Lincoln bisexual? This Way Out's Brian DeShazer talks to a documentarian whose recent film investigates some queer evidence about the 16th President of the United States.
He is considered a sacred figure by both Republicans and Democrats.
He led the nation through its greatest crisis.
He's on our currency. We build monuments to him.
He's the greatest president the United States has ever had.
Today, the big question that people are asking is, was Abraham Lincoln gay?
In the 19th century, for many men, their closest relationships were other men, and same for women.
Men could live with another man when they're single, and often did, and shared beds.
Lincoln probably slept in the same bed with men more than he did with women.
One of the things that fascinates scholars is his bedding down with Joshua Speed for 4 years.
There is love between those two men.
When you put together all of the evidence, it's really startling.
Lincoln has a type, dashing, daring.
We have this notion that if you have an attraction like that, boom, that's your orientation.
Sexuality through the mid-19th century was far more fluid.
But for someone who wanted a political career, it was mandatory that you have a wife.
Dear Speed, I shall be very lonesome without you. Yours forever, Lincoln.
What you have in the 19th century was very strict marriage culture. Get married, and then everything is possible.
Captain David Derrickson became friends with Lincoln while they were living here at the cottage.
There is a soldier here devoted to the president, and when Mrs. L is not home, sleeps with him. What stuff?
He was seen wearing the president's nightshirt.
If you want a smoking gun, here it is.
But then you see all these shifts to the end of the 19th century.
Freud was devastating to sexuality, defining very rigid categories.
And they're saying if a man loves another man, it's unnatural.
Homosexuality is a mental illness.
It was not only wrong, it was punishable. If Lincoln were to look down today, he would see the United States at a particularly fragile moment.
History is so important because it allows us to understand who we were, who we might become.
Lincoln's legacy is the insistence on equality.
We have been in the house of power.
If you can accept a queer Lincoln, you can accept queer people overall.
He should inspire us to achieve a true democracy for everyone.
I am here talking with Sean Peterson, the director, producer, co-writer, and co-editor of a documentary called Lover of Men, The Untold History of Abraham Lincoln. Welcome to This Way Out, Sean.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
When did you first learn about this notion that Lincoln might be gay?
A book came out by Clarence Tripp, who was one of Alfred Kinsey's sex researchers. And he put out a book called The Intimate World of Abraham Lincoln. Tripp is the first one that's writing a historical book based on evidence showing Lincoln's proclivity for other men. And what's interesting, too, is Tripp is a gay man, a sex researcher who worked in the late 40s and in the 1950s, looking at this evidence through a queer lens and through a sex researcher's lens. And the documentary really becomes more than just Lincoln's story. It becomes the story of human sexuality going all the way back to the beginning of time, and trying to show that Lincoln wasn't some sort of outlier, that really we as modern sexual beings are the outliers. To me, it's an amazing thing about him. It's a wonderful thing that Lincoln was queer. But to the greater world, this is problematic, and you have to fight against it. It's this idea of like, well, prove it to me. And I think there's several points in this, particularly with Lincoln. One, no one in the Victorian period was writing about their sexual, you know, escapades, whether you were having sex with the opposite sex or the same sex. It just wasn't something that was written about. And so it speaks to the time. So where is Lincoln's letter that says, I held you in my arms, Joshua Speed, and made love to you? It didn't exist because he didn't write that about his wife. He didn't write it about, most men did not write it about their wives either. So it's a cultural thing at the time too. The other thing they point to as a burden of proof is like, well, Lincoln had four children. Like, come on, he married a woman and had four children. Herman Melville had kids. Lord Byron had kids. Oscar Wilde had kids. You know, Emerson had kids. Like all these people that we point to as, you know, clearly no one's arguing that these artists were not having sex with men. I think part of the problem, too, is that Lincoln is the president of the United States, the godfather of the grand old party. You know, John Stoffer, who is the chairman of the English department and former chairman of the American Studies Department at Harvard, who's in our film, he had a scholar once say to him, if I lose my faith in Lincoln, I lose my faith in the United States.
Right, right. So, you know, I wanted to note too that in your film, the historians and experts, you know, come from Harvard, Rutgers, Occidental, Wellesley, Columbia, Brown University, University of Massachusetts, University of Utah. So you really did do your due diligence to bring a community of historians together to talk about this subject. How easy or hard was it to get those people to the film and go on camera to talk about, again, something that is so sensitive that it almost feels dangerous, particularly in this time and age, betray or belie an assumption about the American identity?
That's a good question. I mean, part of it was that I consciously wanted to choose people in the Ivy League and people that were in these storied institutions to also not make this seem like a conspiracy theory film. I think a lot of these people were very open to talk about it because this is a lot of their life's work. Now, these are brave individuals. If I was making this film right now in 2025, would they pause? Possibly. It is way more dangerous in 2025 than it even was when I started making this film in 2023. What we were hoping with the film is to try to create an empathy around Lincoln and around human sexuality. What we're saying in the film is that it's not just okay to be sexually fluid, but throughout all of human history, it's very human to be sexually fluid, to have same-sex intimacies. It's not only okay, it's completely normal, and heteronormativity, being heterosexual as the baseline, as the norm, is completely a new idea in the scope of human history.
You are listening to Sean Peterson, writer, director, producer, and co-editor of the film Lover of Men, The Untold History of Abraham Lincoln, on This Way Out. I'm Brian DeShazer. To hear the full interview on our podcast, visit thiswayout.org.
Okay, so when you look at the four men that we have evidence of in Lincoln's life are Billy Green, who he met when he first moved away from his father in the town of New Salem, and they worked in a store together, and they lived in the back of the store, and they shared a cot for 18 months. And they had an intellectual relationship because Billy Green was one of the first people Lincoln met that was his own age that could read and knew grammar. So they were learning to read together and practicing grammar, but staying in this little cot, sleeping together. And the thing that's interesting about Billy Green is that one of the things he said was that Lincoln had the most perfect thighs a human being could have. And that was really indicating, you know, when you look at it through a queer lens, complimenting Lincoln's thighs, femoral sex, having sex with someone's thighs. And it really shows a light that that is, you know, what's going on. There's more to them just being pals and sharing a cot. But also 18 months, clearly in that 18 months, you're working in a store that makes beds, you could have your own cot. You could, you know, sleep on a bearskin rug on the floor. You know, like they didn't need to share the cot. They shared the cot because I think they liked it, you know? So shortly after that, Lincoln becomes a legislator and moves to Springfield, where he meets Joshua Speed, who really would become the love of his life. Because initially, Lincoln goes to Speed's store. He's a shop owner, refined Southern gentleman, and looks to buy a bed from Speed to put in his law office to sleep. Ben Speed immediately says, oh, no. Don't worry, if you can't afford the bed, just you can move in with me. The day they meet, Speed's offering to share a bed with Lincoln, and Lincoln takes him up on it. And it's like, okay, maybe Lincoln was a little broke at the time, get on his feet, stay with Speed for a couple weeks, a month, maybe a year, and then he'll go and get his own place. But they shared a bed for 4 years while Lincoln was a double income earner, where he was making, you know, money as a lawyer and a legislator, easily could have afforded his own place. So that's Lincoln and Speed. And when they break up because Speed his father dies and has to move back to Kentucky, it is the most intense suicidal period of Lincoln's life. And there's records of him having to remove razors from his room. He stops going to the legislature. He loses all this weight. He is devastated. And I think what's important is the letters that you start seeing once Speed moves away. Lincoln writes letters. Now, before this, they're in the same room together. There's no letters because they're with each other every day. But once he's gone, you see these letters. Now, the letters from Speed back to Lincoln are missing. Lincoln was terrible at keeping, you know, track of his stuff. But the letters to Speed. And if you look at these letters, they are so clearly love letters. And you have to put it into context because Lincoln was a lawyer. he was a politician. If you look at all of his writings, they're very dry. They're very formal. He might put a joke in there. He might say something kind of warm, like, how are you doing? Or how's your wife? But the longing and the heart-wrenching quality and the poetry that are in these letters to Speed are unlike anything written in Lincoln's body of work. He writes to Speed in February 25th of 1842, I feel somewhat jealous of both of you now. You will be so exclusively concerned for one another that I shall be forgotten entirely. I shall be very lonesome without you. How miserable things seem to be arranged in this world. If we have no friends, we have no pleasures. And if we have them, we are sure to lose them and be doubly pained by the loss. And, you know, again, he would assign his letters, yours forever, you know, yours forever. And he was not signing that off to many people. Speed is the person he wrote that to the most. Never signed a letter like that to his wife. And the question is, and this is interesting, Tom Balcerski, who's in the film, I got to sit in one of his classes at Occidental and listen to his young queer students in the class talk about this. And they're like, well, listen, even if they didn't have penetrative sex, the fact that they are cuddling in bed every night for 4 years is queer. That is queerness. When two men are writing love letters to each other. So again, our 21st century idea that gayness or queerness means penetrative sex is not something that applied back then. This larger transcending sexuality, transcending queerness, is two men that can express deep love and physically bond to each other and live with one another, and then but also feel like you can't live without each other.
Sean Peterson, thank you for joining us on This Way Out. You can find where to stream the film at loverofmen.com. Join us next time for the story of Abraham Lincoln's other two documented lovers, Elmer Ellsworth and Captain David Derrickson. I'm Brian DeShazer for This Way Out.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Melanie Keller and Tanya Kane Perry and produced by Brian DeShazer. He also produced this week's Lincoln biopic feature and wrote and hosted the Rainbow Rewind with Sherry Lunn. Elton John, the United States Army Ceremonial Band, and the United States Marine Corps Band performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Yavanna Foundation, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating 50 years together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on Radio Phoenix, Phoenix, Arizona, WPKN Bridgeport, Connecticut, CJLY Slocum Valley, New Denver, Nelson, and Crawford Bay, British Columbia, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
Oh, hey, Boomer, radio guy. You're looking pretty good. Long time no see.
Stack them eights, yo-yo. Feel free to let your tongue down and hammer away with words that make you feel good.
Okay, well, I'm not really sure what that means, but now that I've seen you, I wanted to tell you, I got my own radio show. It's on Saturday mornings from 8 till 10. It's called Making Bacon.
Hey, Beaver, the place to get help is on Channel 9, and I'll do a 10-5 about that motion lotion all over this here slab.
I don't know what that means, but I don't think you should be saying stuff like that.
Keep the shiny side up and the dirty side down.
Okay, whoa, okay, look, it's just Saturday mornings from 8 until 10. Check it out, Making Bacon, CFRC 101.9.
Idle talk is a nuisance. Get out there and do it to it. Love and kisses.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365.